they'll have to get the paid for it. Yeah. Okay. All right. Of course, uppermost in our minds are thousands of our young people that are on the front lines, and it's very worrisome and very difficult. And so, of course, everybody is saying Tillim. There's a special prayer that was composed that will be on the back page of the Torah Tidbits tomorrow. And it's a tefillah that should be said every day. It's a tefillah for our people living in the south of the country. I'm wondering whether the south of the country is beginning to become the center of the country as it moves, the range moves further and further up. But our young people are out there, and it's very difficult to live with it. It's very difficult. Everybody has somebody very close to them there. That makes it difficult. And all of them are close to us. All right. So we are learning Torah in the schus that Klal Yisrael should emerge victorious, and finally, if there's ever such a thing as finally in Jewish history, our history is that long that nothing is finally, that we should be able to crush our enemies. Amen. All right. It's not going to be an easy shear. So, there are a lot of ideas. I'm going to try and get as much of it across as I can and do it as best I can, but I'm just not so sure about it. It's all based on a shear of Rav Soloveitchik. And I think I'm trying to work it out all over again just so that I should know it better. And then there are ideas there that that are very, very significant. But it's not a simple shiur. I would say that as we reach now the end of Sefer Bereshit, and this is something that we had pointed out years ago, Sefer Bereshit is the story of brothers. Better said, the relationship between brothers. Better said, the non or negative relationship between brothers. The first set of brothers are Cain and Hevel, and there, of course, the problem is resolved with a great deal of finality. Cain kills Hevel. Next set of brothers we have are Shem, Cham, and Yafet, the children of Noah. They're going to go their different ways. They're going to go in radically different ways. They're going to wage war with one another. There will be unique moments in history where Shem and Yafet converge. The age of the great philosophers and scientists of Greece, that was from Yafet, and there was a relationship with Klal Yisrael. But since then, as we learned once in the Kuzri, since the time of the great philosophers of Greece, Greece has meant nothing in history. Fascinating. The seat of most probably all of the greatest knowledge concentrated in one place that this world knew. Aristotle, Socrates, all of the rest. Greece hasn't produced anybody like that in the 2,500 or more years since the age of the great philosophers. The only ones, of course, who kept producing great people were Klal Yisrael. But Greece, nothing, it became a backwater country. The next set of brothers are Yitzchak and Yishmael. Yitzchak and Yishmael are right now at each other's throats, locked in a terrible, terrible struggle, and we have absolutely no way of knowing when that struggle will will ever end. It will end most probably in Biat HaMashiach, with the coming of the Mashiach, but there's absolutely it's not on the radar screen, as they would say, that there should be any peace between Islam and the Jewish people. Islam is out at war now against the entire Western world. We're living in a time of an age of a crash of civilizations. Civilizations are simply locked in great struggle with one another. And it is a difficult time, and it will continue to be. Very difficult to see how anything is going to change. What's the next set of brothers? Yaakov and Esav. Yaakov and Esav. So we know the famous Rav Shimon ben Yochai. Rav Shimon ben Yochai said, Halacha b'yoduahu. It's a halacha. We know that Esav sonei li Yaakov. Esav hates Yaakov. What you have to keep in mind as you read the newspapers, if you have the stomach to read the newspapers, how many friends we have around the world, how many friends we have, and how many of those that we thought were great friends are coming out with all sorts of accusations against us. It's not only a world of a double standard, I was just reading last night I was reading one of Bernard Lewis's books. Bernard Lewis is the great scholar of Islam in our generation, Dave Lewis, and he's 92 years old. Ganzen Sechel over there. So he says that he has a whole chapter on the double standard. He lists all sorts of places where Muslims slaughtered Muslims in the tens of thousands in our time. Not a word was raised in the. Not a word was said in the whole world. He describes in detail, I didn't know all the details, he describes in detail how Assad, the Tatar, Yimach Shemai, there was opposition to him in this northern city in Syria called Hama. There were no negotiations. He leveled the city. Killed men, women, and children. Between 25,000 to 30,000 people were slaughtered in a matter of a week. Nothing. The world. A few months later, Christian phalanges go in to Sabra and Shatila and slaughter face Palestinians that we were not guilty of. The world has not forgiven us for that. Ad hayom hazeh. And of course, excessive force is being used. What are you talking about? What are we doing? We're targeting civilians. It's unbelievable. And you have to watch our good friends who are here. How many times have our recent prime ministers run off to Turkey? Turkey. That's our relationship with the Muslim world. Zanim. But we're talking about Esav now. The Esav world, just watch. Even the little items in the news are important, just to know who our friends are. So that struggle continues until today. The next set of brothers, of course, are the 12 brothers, the children of Yaakov. And the story of Sefer Bereshit is a family that is shaking by the terrible tragedy of the sale of Yosef. Is a family that by the end of the Sefer, it would seem that they have become reconciled with one another. By the way, by the end of the Sefer, I mean, it takes mamish to the last few psukim in Vayechi, after Yaakov has passed away and is buried in the Maros HaMachpelah. They come back home, and it's years after the sale of Yosef, after he has revealed himself. And they say, Avichot Tzival Lefnei Moso, your father commanded before his death that you shouldn't harm us. You know what that means? It means that there is unease, there is fear. That's not a healthy relationship in a family. And then Yosef, again, in the last few psukim of Sefer Bereishis, he tells her, no, it was all part of God's plan. I don't worry, I'm going to... It means that, I don't know why this time I have the feeling that it ends. Yes, there's a reconciliation, but this is going to take a little longer than the end of Sefer Bereishis. It may take throughout all of history until ultimately we will become Goy Echod Baretz. As the Zohar says, in Eretz Yisrael, we will ultimately become Goy Echod. That's, of course, what's supposed to be taking place right now. You'd never guess that that's what's supposed to be taking place right now. We seem to be more torn apart now, but I think that's the great challenge. I have nothing to say as how we're going to go about doing it. I'm afraid that that's going to be a job for Mashiach. But division between the brothers is not all a bad thing. Yaakov is going to bless his children, and he's really going to describe each one of them in a completely different way. Yehuda is Gurayeh, the lion. Shimon the Levi, he describes their anger and their strength. Reuven is hasty. Yosef is Bechor Shoro Hodolov, the beauty of the ox and the strength. Binyamin is a wolf that tears its prey apart. Don is that Shimshon is a snake on the path. Naphtali is Ayola Shlucha. And Ayola, what's that? That's a deer. Where do you see Naphtali Ayola Shlucha? What? The Doar. That deer or whatever it is. Post office. Okay. Yisachar is the Chamor Gohem. We're talking about people. They're all different. They all have different talents and different abilities. And they're 12 individuals. Each one is unique in character, temperament, talent, personality, opinions, strengths, and each one represents a unique kind of life force. And what emerges from the brachas that Yaakov gives to his children is God never wanted us to be clones. He didn't want all of us even to serve him in precisely the same way. There is halacha, which outlines how we are supposed to serve him, but there's place in Klal Yisrael for chassidim and misnagdim and litaim and even within the chassidic community, all of the various groups in the litai community. I mean, we got so many. But by the way, that and we'll see in a moment what Rav Kook has to say about that. That we're not supposed to be clones. Imagine an orchestra with only one instrument. Very boring. A painting with only one color. The beauty of the painting is the whole galaxy of colors. The power of a symphony is all of the various sounds coming together to create that great piece of music. Klal Yisrael is supposed to be the same way. I'll point out on the sheet down number 3. This is Rav Kook. Hevdelei haminhagim v'halachot hein lechora echad hagormim lepirud v'lachalukah chevratit v'Beit Yisrael. The various communities, the Eidot, as they call them here. It's more than communities. We're talking about Sfardin and Snagdin and Sfardin, real Sfardin. We're talking about Moroccans and Taimanim and Iraqis, and all of them have their own minhagim there. You go from one shul to the next in Har Nof, you think you've moved into who knows what kind of a different world. This one doubles like this, and this one doubles like this. This one says that one says that. I've had the experience, I've been spending a little time someplace where the only minion that I have, oh, there are a few minyan, but they're all Sparty. All Sparty, Sparty, little girls. Oh, God. And at first, like, I thought that I'm a Greek in the tabernacles. How did I get there? I'm Yuvan and Sikha. Where did I get lost over here? And then I got a hold of myself and I said, go. These are Jews that have been davening like this for the last 2,000 or more years. And I'm getting into it. You don't hear me screaming yet, but I'm... yes, they have minhagim. They have minhagim. One did not go through life and thinking, only the way I do it. That's the only good way. And everything else is no good. Because that's destructive of the Jewish people. So Rav Kook goes on to say, with regard to the difference in custom between various communities, it would seem that that contributes to the divisions. How are we supposed to relate to this phenomenon of all sorts of different minhagim? We're supposed to be the same religion, but they're different. So this is a letter that was written by Rav Kook. Al tipol ruchacha, let not your spirit fall. Mimasha kol eidat zlichal hachazik b'minhager u'mesoroter, from the fact that every community has to hold on to her customs and her tradition. V'libcho yehne, and your heart is going to wonder. Eicha toshu ve'leinu ha'achdut ha'le'umit, how are we ever going to see a return of national unity? Everybody's going off in all sorts of different directions. So Rav Kook says, let not your spirit fall. Shtei tshuvot ladavar. There are two answers. Ha'achat, one answer is, kol zman sheha'echad mechavedet mesoret chavedo, as long as one respects the tradition of his fellow Jew, ein chilukei ha'horos ha'minhogim ha'shonim pogmim et ha'achva. The difference in hugim, and they in no way do they cause any harm to brotherhood. If you can respect the other and his minhagim, that's wonderful. Vashniya, and the second is, yesh b'chilufei hagavanim mishum osher ruach. The various hues and colors that make up the Jewish people represent a wealth of the spirit. Osher ruach. They all come together in a beautiful harmony of the Jewish people. Yachadim zot, together with this, yesh lidot behevdelei haminhagin, you have to see the difference between the various customs, v'hamasorot, and the traditions. Matzav zmani, it's a temporary situation. Ad yigamer hatzivyon haleumi b'mloo, until the complete full stature of this nation will be completed. And then what will happen then, Oz Hamasoret Atzma Machnicha Otanu Lahamid B'makom HaMikdash Beit Din Gadol Kali L'chol HaOmah. When we finally reach that point, then first of all, we will all be joining together in a Beit HaMikdash. We will have a Sanhedrin on Har HaBayit that will regulate what goes on in Klal Yisrael, and will create the harmony between all of the minhagim. And you know, sometimes you come up with this at one time, like, you know, I bought into it. Oh, this is Minig Yerushalayim, you know, such and such is Minig Yerushalayim. So when it made things easier, I loved it. You understand? Do give me Minig Yerushalayim. But then there are other things that it's Minig Yerushalayim. It's not really. My father didn't do that. His Zayde didn't do it. So Shlomo Zalman, Arbam Zayde, Tzadik Rav, said that in Yerushalayim there is no Minig Yerushalayim. Jews have come from all over the world. So what are you supposed to do? At the gates to Yerushalayim, you throw out the tradition of 2,000 years, you come into Yerushalayim, Ani Yeled Tov Yerushalmi, I'm a good Jerusalem boy. No, no, no. The beauty of Klal Yisrael is, yes, all the various menhagim, mizolna, canon, we should only be able to live side by side indeed in peace. But where do they come from? There's somebody's fixing something outside. Where does it come from? So we understand, according to tradition, that each of the 12 tribes had their own minhagim, they had their own masorah, they had their own nusach hatfila, and that created the tapestry that is the Jewish people. Where does it all come from? Where do the differences come from? And so the Chov begins by analyzing Rachel and Leah. Everything starts with Rachel and Leah. Because by right, Yaakov should have been just like Yitzchak and Avraham. Each one had one. Yaakov has 12. The 12 are because of the mothers, Rachel and Leah. This is in general, there's something very difficult to understand. It says, the Hashgacha, God had designated one wife for Avraham, from whom will come the next generation. One wife for Yitzchak. For Yaakov, two. And really the two brought in another two, a total of four. Why was it so? Why was it so? Obviously it's so that we should have this place for all of these differences. But what's difficult to understand is, why did Leah have to go through what she went through in order to marry Yaakov? He did not like her. And that is an understatement. And she, together with her father, are going to they're going to trick Yaakov at the most important moment in a person's life. He's getting married. And she's part of it. She's part of it. She's not innocent over here. I mean, somebody may say, her father forced her. No. It doesn't seem that her father forced her. It didn't seem that her father forced her. Why did it have to be that way? Why did this have to be the cause to the way that she marries him? Why did it have to be that Yaakov doesn't like her? Why did it have to be that Vayar Hashem God saw ki snua Leah, that Leah is hated? So the Medrash says, and the Medrash really, it's a long Medrash, but the Medrash is summed up in one Rashi. And it's a Rashi that people don't understand. So, I don't know, we're going backwards, we're going from number 3, we're going to number 2. In Parshat Vayishlach, it's a Rashi that it's a mitzvah just to understand the Rashi. Vateitzei Dina bat Leah, asher yodah liYaakov. Dina, the daughter of Leah who had been born to Yaakov, she went out, lirot, b'tanot haaretz, to see the daughters of the land. And we know exactly what happened. Hamor, the son of Shem, raped her, and then began the whole terrible story of Shem until Shimon and Levi massacred the city of Shem. And of course, they used excessive force. Shimon and Levi used excessive force. And civilians were hurt during the course of this onslaught by Shimon and Levi. What Rashi says. Rashi. Dina bat Leah. The pasuk describes her as the daughter of Leah. V'lo bat Yaakov? Isn't she the daughter of Yaakov? Why does the pasuk specifically point out bat Leah? Ela al shem yitzi ata. She is called the daughter of Leah because her going out. Nikrei bat Leah. That's why she's called the daughter of Leah. Sha'af hi. Yatsa onit haita.
she was also one who would go out. Now, if that doesn't sound good, you're absolutely right, it doesn't sound good. A woman who is a yatz'amit, who goes out, well, the Medrash is more specific. It leaves the impression of a loose woman, like Leah, and the Medrash says, Ki'ima, Shenama, Vateitse Leah Likrato, it says, when Reuven brought the Dudaim, the mandrakes, to his mother, so Rachel said she'd like to have them. And Leah, very forward, she says, you can have the flowers, but Yaakov has to sleep with me tonight. He has to come to my tent. That's forward. And not only that, she goes out toward the end of the day to wait for him to come home to make sure that he's going to come to her tent. Now, what maybe is more fascinating than all is that night she becomes pregnant and she gives birth to Yisachar, who's going to be the great Talmud Chacham of the tribes. Something here doesn't seem to jive. Here is this woman who gets honest. So here I just want to read one sentence of the Rav. Lo ha-medrash v'lo Rashi eina mitkavnim chas v'sholom loma. Neither Rashi nor the Medrash had any intention of saying shehaita l'leya imenu mida miguna shel zona o yatzonit. They don't at all mean that. Anybody who learns the Rashi that way has absolutely no clue of how Chazal expressed themselves. It doesn't mean to say that she was a harlot or a woman of loose morals. There's something they want to tell us about Leah. And this gives us an insight into the personality of Leah. Leah was fearless. Leah had great strength. She was a dynamic woman. She wasn't going to give in to anything. It says the Ene Leah Rakos, the eyes of Leah were, she cried. Why did she cry? Because everybody was saying, the world was saying, there are two sons to Yitzchak and Rivka, Esav and Yaakov. There are two daughters to Lavan, the older to the older, and the younger to the younger. She was destined for Esav. And that's what was understood by everybody. That's what was going to be. And this Leah said, no! No, no, no! And she fought everybody on it. And therefore she was ready to do anything as long as what would be accomplished is that she will marry Yaakov and she will not marry Esau. She's ready to fight for what she wants. Oh, is she ready to fight? Targum says the word Leah has a meaning. The word Leah means exhausted. Leot. Exhausted. She struggled and she fought with all of her might. She's not going to marry Esau. We get and therefore she's going to go out there and wait for Yaakov to come. Leah is a dynamic and a powerful woman. Rachel is precisely the opposite. You know what? Rachel is the silent one. Rachel is a shepsela. The Navi talks about the silent sheep that is taken off to be shorn. Here is this shepsela. Shepselas have, you know, nice, warm, comfortable wool, and then one day they take the shepsela and they shear it off, and the poor shepsela is cold. But the shepsela doesn't fight back. Rachel makes the greatest sacrifice one can imagine, and in silence. She's going to give up the greatest moment of her life, and she has no idea that someday in the future she will be married to Yaakov. She
she helps her sister. She doesn't want her sister to be embarrassed. She gives the simanim that were made up between Yaakov and Rachel and her, she gives it over to her sister. She is the one who is the quiet, the passive, weak maybe, except two moments in her life. The outburst. And that outburst was really not an intellectual outburst. Hovali bonivi in my inmaisonachi, give me children, otherwise I'm going to be dead. That was an outburst of a woman in great pain. And then, of course, when Klal Yisrael are on their way out into exile, she comes above her keder and she pleads before God for her children, give me my children. And me'an alihi nachem, she refuses to be consoled. These are two different personalities. One is aggressive and dynamic. The other is quiet, laid back. One is a fighter. The other is not a fighter at all. Rachel makes sacrifices. What awesome sacrifices. One compromises. She's mevater. How do you say vitur in English? Vitur, she lets things be. Huh? Gives away, gives in, surrenders. She surrenders. Leah doesn't know the meaning of the word surrender. When we have these two types, then we can assume that there are going to be children who are going to take after these mothers. It's going to be in the genes someplace. It's going to be in the genes, and it's going to be transmitted to the next generation. In terms of Kabbalah, Rachel is Chesed, one of the emanations, one of the Svidot. Rachel is Chesed, kindness. She gives up. She surrenders the most valuable thing, the most valuable moments of her life. She surrenders. And of course, remember, she's going to have to surrender something else. Never occurred to her. She's not going to be buried with Yaakov in the Moras HaMachpelah. The one who's going to get married is going to be Leah, not her. Rachel is Chesed. Leah, in Kabbalah, she is Gvura. Might, courage. Heroism is a better word. These personality and character traits are going to reveal themselves. Going to reveal themselves in their children. And that's going to set the stage for a great struggle. And that struggle is the one between Yehuda and Yosef. Yehuda is the prime son of Leah. Rachel is her child is Yosef. Yosef is Rachel. And Yehuda is Leah. Now we have to understand what it means. So the Chav over here, take the other side. Number four. The introduction of the Rambam to Pirkei Avos is called the Shmona Prakim LaHarambam, the eight chapters of the Rambam. You can guess, of course, why it's called Shmona Prakim LaHarambam, because there are eight chapters there. In chapter 6, the Rambam defines and describes, he paints a picture for us of two distinct and unique personalities. Here, we'll go through parts of it. Perek Shishi, 6th chapter. V'hetreish Hashem ben hechosin ha-me'ula u'ben ha-koveshet yitzro v'ha-moshel b'nashol. The difference between ha-chosin ha-me'ula, the absolute pious one, the absolute pious one, and then that's one kind of personality. And the other is a personality that he calls Kovashit Yitzro, the one who is able to conquer his evil inclination, Umogshel, and rules over his will. I mean, obviously it means, and this is what Rambam is going to describe, there's a Chosid Hama'ula who never desires evil. Doesn't, it's a Kushar Neshuma, a Heligan Neshuma that is pious through and through. Evil does not tempt the Chosid Hama'ula. That's why he's called the absolute, the highest level of Chosid. The Moshel Berucho means somebody, yes, he feels temptation, and life for him is a struggle. And in that struggle, there may be moments at which one is going to slip and fall, but he picks himself up again, and he begins to rise upward. Amru ha-philosophy, just a few lines we'll draw here. The philosopher said, Shehamoshel b'nafsho, the one who rules over himself, even though he does good deeds, because he is able to overcome his evil inclination. Who also he does them, at the same time that he does good, he has a desire to do evil. Both at the same time. And he's drawn toward them. But he conquers his evil inclination. And he's able to do battle with his evil inclination. In all that he does, al mashi yiru elav kochotav v'tavoto utchunat nafsho, he is aroused and awakened according to his ability and his lust and his character traits. He likes evil. V'aseh tovot, but he does what's good. V'hu mitzta'er v'asiyatam, and he's pained by doing good. V'nizok, and it causes him harm. But you know what? He's able to do it. Our chosid. Oh, the chosid, the pious one, who shenimshav b'pulato achar ma sheti'ireyu tavato v'tchonato. He also, his deeds are also dictated by his desires and his lusts. But his desires and his lusts are for piety, not for evil. V'yasa ha'tovot, he does what's good, v'hu mit'aveh v'nichsav aleihem. And he desires, and he's drawn to it. Uvaskaling on a philosophim, the philosophers decided, Shachosid yoter chashuv yoter shalem min hamoshel b'nafsho, that the pious one is far more important and far more complete a personality than the one who rules over his evil inclination. All right, okay. Let's go to the next. Next paragraph. V'kasher chokarnu divrei chachamim. The Rambam is going to disagree with the philosophers. He says, yeah, they have a point. But when we delved into the words of our wise men, nimtzo lehem, there we find shahamit avel aveirot v'nichsach aleihem, hu yoter chashuv v'yoter shalem. Our rabbis disagree with the philosophers. The person who desires to do something that is aser, and is drawn to it, and is able to overcome his desires, is considered more pious than the one who is an absolute, we'll use it again, yelet tov Yerushalmi, you understand, good boy, never desires evil. Kashelo yitaveh aleihem, v'lo yitzteir v'anacha, more than the person who doesn't desire, and has no pain by letting his taiva go. Atcha amru, to the point that the rabbi said, shekol asher yiyeh ha'adam yoter chashuv v'yoter shalem, the mother says, the greater a person is, the greater is his Yetzer Hara. He brings the Gemara. Kol HaGodl Michavero Yitzro Godl Mimeno. According to the Gemara, the greater the tzaddik, the greater is his Yetzer Hara. V'lo dayam zeh, that was not enough for the rabbis. Archa Amru, Sheschar HaMoshe Benatsho Godol V'Rov Tzaro B'Mashto B'Nosho. The reward for a person who is able to overcome his Yetzer Hara is far greater than the one who didn't have to struggle. As they said, Lefum Tzara Agra, according to the extent of the pain in fulfilling mitzvahs and doing the right thing, the reward is greater. Our rabbis take a completely different position than the philosophers. And then we come just a few lines now to a classic Rambam. I think classic. V'yotemihem. Yotemihem say even more than this. Shehen tzivu liyot ha'adam mit'avel la'aveyot. Listen to this. It's going to shiria timbers. The rabbi said that a man should desire sin. For his hiru miloma, they warn people not to say, Shani b'tivi lo et avel zot aveira. A person shouldn't say, I by nature have absolutely no desire for that aveira. For afopi, shelo osro ha-Torah, even though the Torah didn't prohibit it, for who am I? Listen to, you'll see what he means. Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel Omer, Rabbi Shimon the son of Gamliel says, Lo yomar adam I efshi lecha obasa b'chalav. A person should never say, God, I can't eat meat and milk. Oh, I efshi lilvo shatnez. I couldn't walk around with a jacket of shatnez. I efshi lavol herva. I could not engage in illicit relationships. That's not what a person should say. You know what a person is supposed to say? He's supposed to say, Efshi, I can do all of the Avedas. Uma Esa, but what should I do? Avisheba Shemayim Gozaralai. My Father in Heaven has decreed that I shouldn't do it. Completely different approach than the philosophers. But Rambam is going to explain what the difference between the philosophers and Chachmei Yisrael are. You know what the philosophers are talking about? The philosophers are not talking about the avedas of wearing shatnez or eating basa b'cholov. The philosophers are talking about a person who desires to rape, kill, mug, murder, steal. Those are the avedas they're talking about. And therefore, of course, the philosophers are absolutely right. Are you kidding me? Of course, the chosid hamu'ula, and who's the chosid hamu'ula? The one who doesn't rape. The one who doesn't steal. The one who doesn't kill. If he's not a murderer, kintin mafter yayne yayne. He's not a murderer. They're talking about two different worlds. The philosophers and Chachmei Yisrael are in two different worlds. In our world, no. One is not supposed to say, oh, Chazer, you kidding me? I walk into a trade for restaurant, I smell it, I run out. Is that what you're supposed to say? Supposed to say that there's a whole world that eats it. You know, so you have to be aware of this sometimes when they hear. I was in Time Magazine place, they had an article about the seafood that Japanese eat. You know, they eat snakes, and the Chinese eat, I don't know, the Chinese eat Japanese, and everybody's eating all sorts of things. The response should not be, hey, I couldn't do that. The response is supposed to be that, you know, people eat it. These may very well be delicacies. And you know what? There are delicacies sometimes, you know, that is schmeckt good. You understand? It's very good. But I can do it. I'm capable of eating it. But I will not do it. Because the conversion goes out of life. That's the kind of Moshe of Berucho that the Rambam is talking about. The Rav will say that Yosef is the Chosid Hamu'ula and Yehuda is the Kovesh et Yitzchak. He falls. Yes, though ultimately Moshiach was born from his relationship with Tamar, but it wasn't that shame. Shlomo HaMelech and Moshiach are going to be born from David and Bathsheba, but it wasn't so shame. Yehuda is one who struggles. He struggles. He's a fighter. He's the daughter of Leah. There's a dynamism to him. There's a strength to Yehuda. Even though he failed miserably with regard to Mechirat Yosef, when he said, let's not kill him, let's sell him into slavery, that was a terrible failure of Yehuda. And it says immediately afterwards there in Parshas Vayeshev, Vayeded Yehuda Me'ezechav, and Yehuda went down, his brothers, Horiduhu Migidulato, they brought him down from his greatness. It seemed that he had the personality, the character traits of being a born leader, but he made a mistake. Oh, but he realized, he learned from his mistake. Yehuda learned from his mistake. And when finally, in the next seder in Miketz, it's a matter of going down to Mitzrayim for the second time, the one who emerges as the leader amongst the brothers is Yehuda. Yehuda takes responsibility. He takes responsibility, he takes charge. He's dynamic. That's Leah. A dynamism to the point of chutzpah. And at the beginning of Parsha Vayigash, when there's the struggle that's taking place between the two, it's a struggle between Yehuda and Yosef, who is going to be Melech. What Yosef dreamed of, what Yosef longed for, was to be Melech Yisrael. Because he had all that was necessary. He had all the character traits, all the personality. He was nearly the greatest of all of the brothers. He had two dreams. One dream was about sheaves of grain in the field. And all of the grain of the brothers bowed down to his grain. That was a dream of economic power. But the second dream was where the sun and the moon and 11 stars bowed down to him. That's not a dream of economic power and strength. That's not money. There are no dollar signs in that dream. In that dream, we're talking about somebody who the greatest powers in the universe bow before him. Yosef sees himself as ultimately being the great leader of the Jewish people. And here the Rav goes off in a fascinating direction. And I would say that not only the direction of the Rav is one that the Ramban would approve of. Why doesn't Yosef reveal himself to his brothers? Why doesn't he reveal himself? So the Ramban says, as soon as he sees the brothers in front of him in Mitzrayim, he remembers the dreams. He remembers the dreams. They bow down to him. Oh, you know what just now happened when they bow down to him? They've come to buy grain in Mitzrayim and they bow down to him. Dream number one has been fulfilled. They are bowing down there, not to the great qualities of leadership or mind or piety of Yosef. They're bowing down to the economic power of Yosef. That's the first dream. The grain of the brothers bow down to the grain of Yosef. But that's not what Yosef wants. It's the second dream. The second dream is the one that moves him and keeps him going. He's not going to reveal himself because he still looks forward to the moment at which, yes, he's going to maneuver it and manipulate it, that ultimately his father is going to come down. And if his father doesn't know who he is, his father will bow down to him too. And that will mean that his father is also finally bent before Yosef, and Yosef will be the leader in the Jewish people. That's, the Rav says, that's why he doesn't want to reveal himself. He's still holding out for that possibility. That's his great dream. he feels that he has the character, the personality, the talent, the ability, the brilliance. And he does. He does. But in a moment of weakness, Lo Yochol Yosef Lehitapei, Yosef was unable to control himself. You know what he did? He said, I'm me, Yosef. I am Yosef. At that moment, Yosef knows that he is not going to be the leader of the Jewish people. His father will come to Mitzrayim, and his father is not going to bow down to Yosef. The second dream will not be fulfilled. And Malchus is going to go to Yehuda and not to Yosef. In a sense, you know what Yosef now becomes? Yosef now becomes exactly what Rachel was. You know what Rachel was? Rachel was the great enabler. She paved the way for Leah to become the wife of Yaakov. She made the great sacrifice. She set everything up. The chosen who was supposed to be her chosen is not going to be her chosen. She's even going to help her sister accomplish what her sister wants. There's a vitur. Yosef is going to take the back seat throughout all history. Though, of course, the struggle will continue in all sorts of ways. There will be a Mashiach ben Yosef, and there's going to be a Mashiach ben David. The Gemara talks about two Mashiachim. There will be two. Because Yosef will retain a sense of leadership. But you know what Mashiach ben Yosef does? What does Mashiach ben Yosef do? He paves the way for Mashiach ben David. Just like Rachel paved the way for Leah, Yosef prepared a Klal Yisrael, saved the Klal Yisrael. Only that Yehuda is going to become the leader of the Jewish people. It's not going to be Yosef. Tell you, when I started thinking about the idea of Mashiach and Yosef, it brought me back to something else that we talked about in the past that always bothers me. I raised the question, how is it possible that the brothers didn't recognize him? You remember that shit? How is it possible? It keeps bothering me. So I have a nephew who wrote a sefer, and he tells me that there's an answer in there. I didn't have a chance to look at it. But then I have a nephew, the only one, who I saw, it sounds like his uncle's words. He lists 17 hints that Yosef gave his brothers that they should be able to recognize him, and they don't recognize him, and they don't recognize him. So you remember the shir there that he wanted. Yosef craved more than anything else. This is a different shot from the top. You'll see why I'm saying it now. Yosef craved more than anything else that they should recognize him and they should say, you're Yosef. But it doesn't happen. So all right, it was a great shir, but you were all left with one question. How in heaven's name don't they recognize their own brother? And the whole area strewn with hints. But big hints, nearly putting the words into their mouths. He seats them at his dinner table, and there are place cards over there. Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda, Yisrael. It's unbelievable. And they sit there, and the men are so, they're amazed. Suck up, baby! Who else in the world could know
their birthdays.
I always promise myself one day that I'm going to learn the birthdays of all of my grandchildren. I don't know. Yosef remembers the birthdays of, what have been my grandchildren? My children. I have to be reminded. And so, as I was studying, and this may be the subject of another shiur, there's a very powerful, powerful statement made by the Vilna Gaon. The Vilna Gaon said the following: "Vayakir Yosef is Echov, Vehem Lohi Kiduhu." Yosef recognized his brothers, but they didn't recognize him. He says that that may happen at another moment in history, and we have to make sure then to recognize Yosef. And he says, who is that? Moshiach ben Yosef. And he says the following, I mean, it's shivers me. The Jewish people may find themselves living in a process of geula, and people don't see it. Who manages the process of geula? Who's the one that's moving the pawns on the board of Jewish history? Moshiach ben Yosef. And people can be blind. Sometimes, you know why it's difficult sometimes? Like for some people it may be difficult. I remember 40 years ago I debated on the pages of a certain magazine with a great man. Great man said, you think that now is a process of redemption? What are you talking about? Wars, terrorism, Jews being killed, this is a process of geula. So I sent back a very brief letter. I said, yeah. The Gemara says, Milchoma Nami, war also is a chalta de geula. That's part of the process of the beginning of redemption. And that's the only place in all of Shas family and Yerushalmi. How did you like that for a broad encompassing statement? The kind that I like to make. The only place where it says the words are Chalta de Gula. Because the seventh bracha in Shemoneh Esrei is the bracha of Gal Yisrael. The Gemara says, why is it the seventh bracha? Because Geula is going to come in Shemitah year. So then the Gemara says, but wait a minute, we have another statement of our rabbis that in the Shemitah year there will be war. So what are you telling me, Geula is coming then? And the Gemara says, yes, Milchoma Nami, war also is atchalta de Geula, is the beginning of redemption. That's part of the process. The process isn't a rose garden. That's right. What's happening right now, how difficult it is. That's part of the process. And you know what you need? One needs strong nerves to be able to make their way through the process. And what does the Vilna Gaon say? The Vilna Gaon says, don't make the mistake again of Ayake Yosef as Yaakov, Yaakov, Yosef. Yosef recognized his brothers, but they didn't recognize him. The Gemara says, in fact, that Moshiach ben Yosef is going to be killed in battle. But then the Gaon and others say, we can save Moshiach ben Yosef. But you know what Moshiach ben Yosef is? He's the one who paves the way for Moshiach ben David. Yehuda is the dynamic one. Yehuda is the one who has inherited all of the qualities of his mother Leah. By the way, now you know why Yaakov had to have two wives. He needed to produce a chosid hamu'ullah, the great pious one. Rashi next week's Sedra, when they tell us that Yosef hoyav in Mitzrayim, who Yosef? He was the Yosef, and they describe Yosef. He was always the same Yosef. Who Yosef in Mitzrayim? Who Yosef in jail? He's Yosef who was the second in command in Mitzrayim. Yosef was an even-keeled individual. Nothing changed him. He was solid in his piety. Yehuda, like David, tempestuous, stormy personality. And the Rav says, the Jewish people can't have a king who hasn't struggled with himself. A king who has never struggled will never understand his people. Yehuda lives through that own personal struggle, and maybe every day. He is far, far in a better position to understand the neshama of the man in the street, the neshama of Klal Yisrael. So there had to be Leah and Rachel. They had to, from whom had to come a Yehuda and a Yosef, and ultimately only the first dream of Yosef is going to be fulfilled. He will be the great economic power, but he's not going to be the one who will be Melech. And that's really, let's go to the back, to the very beginning. I think I had the whole thing all upside down. Yehuda Afa Yilducha Achecha. His father tells him in this week's Seder, Yehuda, your brothers are going to acknowledge you. You're going to be king. Wait, I'm late. Turn over on the other side, get back to the other side. Down at the bottom, where I wrote in. Rachel in Kabbalah is Chesed. Rachel becomes Yosef. And Chesed brings to Kedusha, sanctity. Leah is Gevura, heroism. She begets Yehuda, and Yehuda is Malchus. Malchus requires Gevura. The combination in Kabbalah, the combination of Chesed and Gevura, they together create Tiferet, splendor. You know who splendor is? Yaakov Avinu is Tiferet. Avram was Chesed. Yitzchak was Gevura. That's what they are in Kabbalah. So what do Avram and Yitzchak ultimately bring a Yaakov who is Tiferet? The splendor of kindness and heroism. Same thing is true with Rachel and Leah. Chesed and Gevura. Yehuda and Yosef. Chesed and Gevura. And Yehuda is Kedusha. But what's the highest level? We say it in Davening. Kedusha or Malchus. Royalty. That's Yehuda. That's it. Thank you.